plate a potential nugget.
I want to move to a slightly different theme, Vinay. In the book, you talk about Advani and Vajpayee coming from very different contexts. You also speak about several other leaders coming from very different backgrounds. One of the things that struck me was RSS's ability to handle diversity of talent and letting them flourish while binding the unit together. So talk to us a little bit about your insights around how they managed to do that.
Well, so, I mean, straight up, I have to be honest that it is an exclusive organization on religion. No two ways about it, right? Muslims are not welcome to join the RSS. I have to repeat this, right? But on the other hand, 80% of India is Hindu, right? And the RSS has been able to, A, move outside its upper caste original background, right? And also have a diversity when it comes to income and region, right? Take the four sort of titans of the BJP, right? The two Jugalbandis, Modi, Amit Shah, Vajpayee, Advani. They come from very different backgrounds, right? And their reasons for joining the RSS were also very different, right? Let's take Vajpayee. He joined the RSS because he grew up in a Marathi-speaking area, Gwalior, right? Which had a Marathi speaker as the Maharaj, the head of the head of Gwalior. And it was and he was also a UP Brahmin, even though he lived in Goa, he was a UP Brahmin. So he joined because of regional and caste reasons, right? Advani, on the other hand, is what we call an English-speaking type, right? He went to a missionary school in Karachi, St. Patrick's. He didn't speak a lick of Hindi until 1948 when he comes to India. He spoke English, some Sindhi, right? He reads English books. He was playing tennis when someone told him about the RSS and he joined. I think being the only person to join the RSS after a game of tennis, right? So that's Advani for you, right? He joined RSS because of the catastrophe of partition, right? Because he sees India's geography being split. And he says that there's no other party that supports me except, you know, the RSS, right? That's why he joins, right? If it hadn't, and because of partition, a rich Sindhi family is reduced to near penury, right? And his entire quest is to make India whole again, right? He learns Hindi, he never learns Marathi, he goes works in a village, right? And this is a man who had, you know, they had a horse-driven carriage, a Victoria carriage in Karachi. They had a house, a bungalow with a game room just for games, right? And he then moves to rural Rajasthan. That's why he joined, right? His motivation is very different. I think Modi joined because he came from a poor background, a low caste background, and this gave him a sense of fellow feeling, right? Amit Shah, who I interviewed for this book, I think joined for a different reason, which is that he comes from a wealthier family. His father used to have a PVC pipe business in northern Gujarat. And from an early age, he read his Hindu historical fiction, right? In Gujarati, K.M. Munshi, Dhumaketu, all of whom gave him this particular vision of Indian history as being as Indians failing and being invaded because they're disunited. So he ironically seems the only one of the four to join the RSS because of ideology, right? So you have these really different characters. And what does the RSS do? They push them through officer training camp 1, OTC 2, OTC 3. Everybody sleeps together, you eat together, right? They have these organizational techniques, for example, that if you want to criticize someone else in the RSS, the only person you can criticize that person to is somebody senior to both you and him, right? So that there's no guspus, as they say, that happens, you know, among the juniors. There's nothing like that, right? So these are all the techniques that they learn. And the other thing that they learn, especially in the period that I am writing about, is that difference of opinion is okay. So if you look at economics, for example, in the period I'm writing about, there's a wide range of views within the BJP and Jan Sangh itself on economics, on foreign policy. That is tolerated. But the other thing that I think they're very good at is once a decision is made, everybody falls in line. And I think that's something that when we talk about teamwork and we talk about diversity, we tend to overlook that you must have diversity of ideas. But once a decision is made through a legitimate process, everyone has to fall in line, right? I think Indians do the opposite, that when a decision is being made, sometimes, you know, everybody is quiet, this, that, and then a decision is made, and then the politicking begins, right?
But how do they enable that? How do they enable people owning the decision, even if they disagreed with it?
Well, you see so many examples of this, like, for example, the Ayodhya movement, which Vajpayee opposed, right? He absolutely opposed it, right? When Advani got on top of this Rath Yatra, you know, to travel in September 1990 from Somnath to Ayodhya, right? Very famous movement, right? Where the Gujarat leg of that journey was organized by a young Narendra Modi. Vajpayee said, don't do it. He called Advani, and I refer to the person who told me that, who heard Vajpayee saying that, look, you got on top of a tiger, right? It's going to eat you one day, right? And I think he was right. And, you know, so he was deeply critical of the movement. But you know what? When it was adopted in 1989 by the BJP, Vajpayee didn't leave the party. He kept quiet. He sulked, but he didn't leave, right? I think he had internalized the views of history. So to answer your question, it's an indoctrination from a very early age, right? Almost half the one-hour shakha that you attend every morning is telling you different scenes from Indian history, where the lesson is Indians get defeated because they fight with each other. And they just internalize that, you know.
And I love the term you use, he sulked on mute.
Yes, he sulked on mute. And, you know, I give you enough examples of others within the Jansangh, within Hindu nationalism, who lack this talent. I mean, you know, famously Subramaniam Swami, right, who was in competition with Vajpayee in the 1970s to become the voice of Hindu nationalism. The RSS loved him. Here was a Harvard professor coming back and joining Hindu nationalism, right? But when he was outmaneuvered by Vajpayee, he didn't know how to keep his mouth shut, right? He protested, he gave public press conferences, and those of you who follow Swami today would not, shall we say, be too surprised, right? And that is not acceptable with the RSS, you know, that you wait for your time, you bide your time, and frankly, Vajpayee turned out to be right, which is that, you know, he had a long period of what they call vanvas, right, where he left the party but didn't join any other party. But then the circumstances changed. After the demolition of Babri Masjid, the BJP was looking for a pleasant, moderate face, and Vajpayee was back in demand, right? So I think, you know, Deepak, I think about it when it comes to my own career, you know, that, you know, an uncle of mine who is in some sense my professional idol told me that twice in your career, you will face failure. You will be kicked around. The organization won't give you what you want to give. If you leave at that time, that's what the organization wants you to do, right? Instead, stay, play tennis, hang around, don't irritate someone else. In 1 or 2 years, the stars will change, right? And then your career may be back. But you have to learn to do that. I think Indian politicians, the good ones, understand this, right? That, look, elections come, elections go, you lose some, hang around, don't make too many mistakes, right? And then the voter changes, the stars change, and you're back in business.
It's good marital advice as well.
Yes, I think so. I think so. I think so.
When we think about resilience, we often have this mental image of a warrior in front of us. To recollect a scene from the movie Independence Day that came out in 1996, where the president of USA, played by Bill Pullman, says in his rallying speech, "We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight." And that's often the visual people have when they think of resilience. But in my limited experience, I notice that individual resilience or institutional resilience often feels quite different. Leaders know that they can't win every battle. They ensure that they live another day to fight the good fight. Needless to say, this is a function of the culture of the organization and the context. And this is something that came up in Vinay's earlier book as well, Half Lion, where he profiles Narasimha Rao. And the key attribute he talks about is how Narasimha Rao wielded silence as a strategic weapon to have his way.
The stereotype of Narasimha Rao is which comes from that idea, you know, analysis until paralysis. That would be the joke. And the joke was Narasimha Rao knew how to be silent in 10 languages, right? And I think that misses, you know, something at the core of Narasimha Rao, that he was a man of action, right? But he was also acutely aware that, you know, as the book points out, he lacked power. So his genius was he knew where to act, under which political cover, and when he lacked political cover, he would withdraw. And it's a fine art, right? Because most politicians, you would argue, only care about survival. Narasimha Rao cared about survival, but he also cared about other things.
I noticed that a lot of type A leaders who experience wave one success in their careers for the first 10-15 years often hit a glass ceiling when they get to a CXO role. They're so used to winning in their respective functions, and then they show up at a playground where they face players that are as good or better than them. And this playground often requires a very different style of competitiveness and temperament. and picking which battles you fight and learning to sulk on mute is a superpower for a long innings.